Hi everyone, I'm Jonathan Ciboni, founder and CEO of Luxury Insight, the leading data intelligence platform for luxury brands. Every 2 weeks, Godfrey Dini, Global Editor-in-Chief, and Olivier Guyot, Editor-in-Chief Friends of Fashion Network, interview the people who shape the industry of luxury, fashion, and beauty. Our guests share their personal journey and opinion on the current state of the market and what to expect for the future. You can find all episodes on luxuryinsight.com, social media, and wherever you want to listen to our podcasts. We hope you're going to enjoy this episode.
Good day, everybody. Today, we have the good fortune to have a discussion in our podcast with Walter Butler, a dynamic figure in the world of luxury and lifestyle, who very recently bought Lambrusie, the three-starred Michelin restaurant, much loved by all true gastronomes and lovers of fine cuisine. So delighted to meet you, Walter.
Delighted to meet you, too.
Let's begin at the beginning. You were born in Rio. You're not of French origin, but you've adopted France as your country.
Yes, I came in France with my mother. My mother was Brazilian. She got married three times. The third time was with a French. And when I was 7 years old, I moved from Brazil to France. It was quite difficult for me to move from this sunny and warm country to France, which you don't appreciate at the first moment.
So you did a fairly classical preparation. You ended up going to the ENARC, which is, of course, what all French parents want their kids to do.
That was for my parents, so I succeeded in getting there, yes.
And then your first steps after that, what did you do?
I worked for the French Treasury for a few years, and then I worked for the Ministry of Culture and Communication for 3 years, and it was a very nice time. That's the period under which we privatized TF1, or the largest European TV, and I loved this moment, which was an exposure to the media industry, which was just beginning to be important in Europe.
And apparently then by 1991, you branched out and you created your own investment fund.
Yes.
What made you want to do that?
Before that, I spent 3 years in New York at work at Goldman Sachs, which was by them a private partnership. Okay. And that gave me, I learned a lot there, and that gave me the will to do some entrepreneurial. And at that time, there were very few private equity funds in Europe, and I started one of the very first in continental Europe.
And what was already your target? Where did you want to invest?
We started, there's been really two steps over the past decades. It first was to get to be known, you need to have an area of expertise. And for us, it has been a large turnaround, which means large companies which face financial and operational problem. And my first large turnaround was a very large group actually called BDDP, which is now part of Omnicom. They had like 1 billion of revenues, and we turned it around in a few years. So that gave us this expertise to do this type of investment.
Your first steps into lifestyle, what were they?
I think the first step has been when we bought Group Flo, which is one of the largest restaurant chains in France. They own like the 15 brasseries, including, for example, La Coupole, Beaufinger, not far away from here.
Vaudeville.
Mm-hmm. And so there really is the French art de vivre, and that was our first experience, I would say.
And what did you learn from that acquisition?
I learned that restaurants and this type of restaurant, the brasserie, as we say, and are very, it's a business where you have to be very close of your clients, know what they want, because the restaurant is an experience where there's not only the food, there's the setting, there is the service. And that's really what I learned, and the need to be very precise about how to manage a restaurant.
It's a business which is very volatile. There are more restaurant businesses go bankrupt every year. Proportionally, there are many other industries. But you invested in long-term brands. Those were been around.
Yes, and those brasseries that I mentioned, they're still alive today. They have their clients. The clients have changed. They're younger, but they're because it's their brands. La Coupole, they have it's the largest brasserie probably in Europe. Mm. You have 250 employees just for this restaurant. Le Bœuf sur le Toit, for example, which is very popular. It changed over the past 25 years, but it did exist and it's still doing business today.
But what was it, why were you able to buy it that someone wanted to sell in the first place?
In the case of Groupe Flow, they had a very huge debt. They had bought several other companies, and they have almost 1 billion euros of debt, and the creditors were very unhappy. So we went through a capital increase, and we took the control of the group because they were at a nice level on the operating side, but the balance sheet, as we say, there was way too much debt. They could not repay the debt. So that's the way we've been investing there.
And it became quite a profitable business for you?
It is. We made a very... At that time, we were working with third-party investors, so we were obliged to sell after 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And that has been a very good investment for us. I can say it's public information. We made 5 times our investment over a five-year period. So
that's a very nice capital gain.
Yes.
Yeah. And that confirmed to you that French lifestyle and luxury was something which could prove profitable.
Yes. I always said I try also to buy a very large house of champagne,
yes,
unsuccessfully. But I've always said, you know, if there's one thing that will be left in France, it is the art de vivre, the lifestyle. And nobody thought 20 years ago that groups like LVMH or Kering would be that successful. Mm. So I think it's part of France, and that's where French groups have been the most successful in the world.
Why do you think French people do luxury better, but better than most people or better than anyone?
I think it's a little bit of everything. If you look at creativity, I think that, for example, Japanese are better than French. But luxury, it's a whole experience where you need creativity, but also the ability to know your clients, to follow them, your competition, to scale. And I think the French groups, some of them at least, have been very good at scaling and also at adding brands one after the other, both LVMH and Kering. If you look at them 20, 25 years ago, it was much smaller groups with a few brands. And and Louis Vuitton itself 20 years ago and now changed. Yeah. When Kering bought Gucci in 2001, and nobody had an idea that 21 years later, it would be, that size and magnitude.
You also invested in Virgin Retail chain in France. Did you buy it? Is that what happened?
Yes, we bought it.
We
bought it from Lagardère, who had bought it to Richard Branson.
From Branson.
Yeah, exactly.
And Branson sold out of frustration slightly, did he not?
No. Yes.
Because he found it too difficult to operate in.
Yes, and for us, it has not been a successful investment.
Oh, no. The
main reason has been the flagship we had was on the Champs-Élysées. We had like a 6 million euro rent, and there's no way we could make money. So this whole, the flagship put the whole group in risk. We had 28 stores around the country.
That flagship now is, I believe, Galeries Lafayette.
Yeah.
And one suspects they're having difficulty making money out of it.
Yes,
too.
I think so. But for them, it's a flagship. It's a large group. They want to show it. And
they're stuck with it. Mm-hmm. Your next investment into experiential business was the acquisition of Paradis Latin. the famous nightclub in the Fifth Iron Diesel. What attracted you to that investment?
I think it's the oldest cabaret in the world. Oh. One of those theaters has been created by Napoleon in 1803 and rebuilt by Gustave Eiffel. And it opened again in 1879, so before any other cabaret in the world. Mm. And this cabaret had little problems because you have to make a show. It's very expensive. You need a lot of investments. And the family that owned the business had not the financial strength to do it. So when I bought it, I made very huge investments everywhere. We made a new show called L'Oiseau Paradis with a very good choreographer, with Kamel Wally. And the attendance or the audience or the revenues have been multiplied by three over the past 4 years. So it is. And we went into a very modern show with great artists.
So it's been a very good investment and a fun one.
We also tried for that. At that time, we had roughly 70% of foreigners and 30% of French. And now it's the opposite of 70% of French. We changed the food. Mm-hmm. Because when you go in a cabaret, you wait for smoked salmon, which is not so good, etc. And I could happily convince Guy Savoy, who has been named the best chef in the world, to do the menu. So he makes 72 meals a year. So that's a lot. So three appetizers, three main courses, two desserts, and four times a year. And that brought us a lot of French customers that come and come again because they like the whole experience, which is not only the show, but what you have in your and what you can drink.
3 or 4 years ago, when Bernard Arnault bought Belmond, the word experiential became the buzzword in luxury. Some people said it was partly because there weren't enough more luxury and fashion brands for him to buy. He had to diversify. But you see that as an area of growth in the future, experiential?
Yes, of course, clearly. And I think this acquisition was a very good move. And we see that some luxury brands now try to extend to, and one of the first steps is really the hotel industry. And yes, with...
But you haven't bought a hotel yet.
We are
looking.
We're looking, and we're looking for two things: hotels and champagne. So that's in the
hotels and champagne
is the shopping list of the next 12 months.
Your next acquisition, when was it, Pierre Hermé?
So that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And Pierre Hermé is the I would say luxury pastry. Pierre created his group. We celebrate the 25th year, and he created his group in Japan, in Tokyo. Mm. And today we have more revenues from Japan than we have from Europe.
Wow.
And actually, the idea of having an hotel is with the Pierre Hermé Group. Mm. There's no reason that luxury brands move into hotel or food, and that we don't move into hotels as well. So the idea will be probably in the next 12 to 18 months to have to create a new concept of hotels in Japan to start.
Pierre Hermé Hotel.
Yes, yes,
wow.
Yes, because it's the. In Japan, it's even more popular than here in France. He has been in Japan for 25 years, and we think the business there is going extremely well, and we have a strong demand. We manage the restaurants of several hotels, the new Otani in Tokyo, the two hotels in Kyoto where we do the pastries, or the overall restaurant.
Oh, you do the whole restaurant?
Yeah, we do that already in, I would say, six different places in Tokyo and Kyoto. So... as we do all the restaurant of La Mamounia, you know, in Morocco. So
you also do that?
Yeah. So
pyramid.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
All the restaurant room service, all the breakfast, and then so it's part of our business.
And that's proved to be a profitable diversification for the or addition to your business.
Yeah, it is, but to work with hotels or being the restaurant of certain hotels, it started 10 years ago, so it's not new. What is new is we accelerate this. We're going to open the Ritz-Carlton in Saudi Arabia for all the restaurants and the room service. So
it's profitable business. The pastry business has quite good margins.
Yes.
Surprisingly large.
I would say it's very close to luxury brands in terms of profitability.
I don't quite understand this giant explosion of chocolaterie, I'm mispronouncing it, in France. There seems to be a new one open every day.
Yes, and on top of that, we're going to open one. I'm glad to invite you.
Where?
From spring 2024. We're just looking in Paris.
In Paris, yeah.
Yes.
Is there a huge demand for this? Clearly there is, if people are opening them.
There's a huge demand. We made, of course, a market study. As you said, everyone opens a chocolaterie, but it works. We're not going to open 10, but one or two, and because we have a very good reputation in chocolate as well.
What would a Pierre Hermé hotel look like?
We spent a lot of time to discuss, and I don't know yet, but the idea today would be to do it in Japan, either in Tokyo or in the country. So it would be two different hotels, so we have to decide which one. Mm. And it would be, I would say, with our own code, which is elegant, simple, and with a light touch. So
the hotels, the key factor is, of course, room occupancy, if you're trying to make money out of them. What makes you convinced that you can get a very high room occupancy in?
Because we see that the idea would be an hotel of around 15 to 25 rooms, not a huge number. What I see clearly over the past 10 years, we're in a world where people travel more and more, whatever we say, you can see the numbers. You have more and more rich people, billionaires, millionaires, and they want to have a new experience. Yeah. So I'm just fascinated by, for example, when I go in Los Angeles, I stay in Malibu in the Nobu Hotel. The price, it's a very small hotel. They have like 20 rooms, if I remember. The price of the rooms is very, very expensive, and it's always sold out.
Yeah.
So when there is something nice, there are clients for that.
Yeah. The it's very elastic. People are prepared to pay that bit much more. Your most recent acquisition, congratulations, last month, was L'Ambroisie, the famous restaurant in Place des Vosges. What attracted you to make that investment?
I think it's one of the best restaurants in the world, in one of the best locations in the world, Place des Vosges, which is historical Paris. The chef, Bernard Paco, who's a very shy person, is not exposed to media, has created this paradise with only 35 seats. He doesn't want any more. And I think he's the one who has the most 3 stars in the world, because that's been 35 years in a row where he got a 3-star restaurant. I think it's typically French cuisine at its best, which is a very pure and with very good products. And the idea there is not to create a brand, but it's maybe to develop one L'Ambroisie, maybe in Tokyo or somewhere in Japan, and maybe set up at some stage in Paris or in Japan a restaurant at a lower price because the cost of a 3-star is really quite expensive, and want to open maybe something which is cheaper but of very good quality, like a brasserie or something like that.
In Paris,
and maybe in Tokyo as well.
Why did he want to sell?
He's a very smart person because he's not so young. And instead, I think he wanted to prepare the transition. So he's going to stay a few years. I think the fact that I invested in his company makes him less stressful, you know, financially. Mm-hmm. And maybe also he will be able to do things that he has never been able to do before. For example, before, when he went to Japan, he had to close the restaurant Place des Vosges. So the idea is really to strengthen
They say health is wealth, and you also invested in a fitness. Is that fair to say? Fitness brand, Norden. Would you call it that?
It's yes. Norden is a French company, yeah. Which sounds more Nordic,
yes.
But it's based in China, so and in Singapore, and it's really more on the Internet of Things, I would say, more on everything that is connected to wealth. It's watches and these type of things, and it works. It's not a luxury brand, I would say, in terms of pricing, but it's a nice, it's a very good sector which increases a lot.
How do you see the luxury business developing over the next 10 years?
I think a lot. I think the luxury business will grow, as in the past, much quicker than the rest of the economy, apart from the defense because of this war. But I think it will be a strong growth because people want to have a good experience, and more people have the financial ability to invest in luxury brands.
To invest or also to buy luxury.
To buy.
Yeah. You feel that market consumer market,
exactly.
That is going to grow.
Exactly.
Do you see any, why do you think certain brands though have been hesitant to invest in the experiential economy? I mean, if you ask Chanel or Hermes, why is there no Chanel Hotel or Hermes Hotel? They just say, it's just not, we're never going to do it. Why do you think some people resist that?
I can understand. Yeah. You know,
Kering as well. Kering, there's no, as far as I know, Kering brand.
No. Yeah. The thing is, both strategies make sense. If it was me, that's what we are going to do, to invest in hotels, because I think it's a good addition to a luxury brand. Mm. So, but I understand that Chanel, Hermès, they want to focus on really their core business. And if you look at Hermès, where it was 20 years ago, and today, it has changed a lot. So it's, Hermès, I don't know if you remember, but Hermès at some stage has been one of the largest shoulder of Leica, the photography.
Yeah.
So these groups have so much cash, and they need to invest this cash somewhere. So it can be also in other projects.
Yeah, so they do speculate in other areas of luxury. Yeah. We've a lot of listeners who are young people who'd like to get into the luxury industry. But before we go on to that, a key area people talk about nowadays in luxury is data. How do you use data to make investment decisions or manage your properties?
We use it more to manage than to make investments. I'm not so happy the way we use data, because we should use data much more than what we do. And it's a hidden jewel there that, and I keep telling my team, we need to know better, to invest in data, to know everything. So for example, for Paradis Latin, one of the reasons that the revenues have been multiplied by three or four over the past 4 years, because we use, I think, in a smart way, the data that we have from our clients, their experience. And as I said, we have now 25% of clients who are people who return, come again. And that's because we know them and we could manage the first experience and get them to come back. And that's because we learn from the data. And I think it's only the beginning of it. There is more and more data that is around. And to understand what the competition does, we really need to invest in data. Mm-hmm.
Artificial intelligence, the big buzzword of the last 2 or 3 months, is it a threat or is it a useful tool? Or both?
As you say, it's a buzz for the past 3 months and maybe for the 2 or 3 months, and then there will be something else. AI exists for since the computer industry exists. You know, it's just the new thing is the acceleration of the technology, the speed at which the developments are made. But Google can know and knows where you've been 20 years ago, who you've been calling, what are the sites you've been looking at, where you've been traveling. So it's not something new. I think what is new is the fact that it will help mankind maybe to work a little bit less. And that's why it creates so much fear. There are two fears, the fear that people don't have a job and the fear that will be too much monitored, you know the whole 1984. So that's it. But I think it's a positive development. To me, the one thing to respect is the private life of individuals.
Okay. The COVID made a huge difference to, obviously, luxury industry, but in most cases, things have bounced back largely to where they were. Is that true for your businesses?
It is. It is. 2022, the reference is 2019, then 2022, we had, for Pierre Hermé, I can give you the numbers, we had a 50% increase, and 2023, we are mid of June compared to last year, we are 15% more of growth on a like-for-like basis.
Okay, very good. We have a lot of young listeners, and there are people who want to get into fashion, luxury, lifestyle management, or creativity. What three bits of advice would you give some young man or woman starting off in their career?
It depends on the character and what these people want to do, but I would say it would be to try to find something that has not been done so far, or that has been done but you can do it in a different way, and invest in knowing if there is a market, and that's where the most investment should take place. And know in what would be the potential competition?
Yeah.
Is there a real market? Are there clients for this? At what price will they be able to buy? Start low, small, and grow like this. And that's really what happened for Pierre Hermé. He started alone 25 years ago. Now we are north of 100 million euros of revenues. So it has been a constant growth. And so that's really the suggestion I would do. And we invest in startups as well. So our door is open to people who have new projects.
Thank you for listening to the Luxury Insight and Fashion Network podcast. If you like this episode, subscribe to our channel to discover more exclusive insights from leaders of the industry. You can find all our episodes on luxuryinsight.com, social media, and wherever you listen to your podcasts.